We turn to again to the Gospel according to John, and dwelling a little this morning, seeking God's help on the particular passage that we read from verse 28 through to 38. The age in which we live is perhaps best known, you might say philosophically, for a statement that it means that we call it the postmodern age, though some would say that we're even beyond that. People don't so much ask the question, but simply state that there is no single truth for all. The Roman governor of Judea in this early first century, Pilate, seems to have had pretty much the same idea. It's about 2,000 years ago, like Ecclesiastes says, there really is nothing new under the sun. He asked that evasive question, what is truth? And I suggest that there's a key sentence in this whole event. As it is now, so it was then, that the truth was tangled up with many false things, false words, false spirit, false objectives. So we come to this passage, we don't learn anything through John about what happened to Jesus after being taken from Annas to Caiaphas. There's a gap there. We have to rely on the other gospel accounts for information about that. John takes up the story again from Jesus being taken from the high priests, and in the interval he also had met with the Sanhedrin, the council. And John only tells the story where he was taken then to meet with the governor, Pilate, at the headquarters while he was in the city. Normally he would have been based probably in Caesarea, further away. But here, during the great feast, it seems he would come to the city, to what was therefore the Praetorium. You can't exactly match it with any words that we have today. But it's where the garrison would be based, and the governor as well, during this time. And then we find, as we go reading through these few verses, 11 verses, you have almost a cinematic view. It's something that you'll see now and again in television or a film, that it's like you can see both sides of a wall, and there's a doorway in the middle, and for a moment you can see on one side, then you see on the other side. They doesn't tell us precisely who, but they led Jesus from the high priest to Pilate, but they themselves did not go into the Praetorium, lest they should be defiled, so that they could go on and eat the Passover or celebrate the Passover feast or week. So they stayed on the outside, but it seems that Jesus was taken inside. It tells us later on that Pilate went out to them, and then he entered the Praetorium again in verse 33 to speak to Jesus. So you've got this setting where the crowd, or the Jews, they didn't hear what Jesus said to Pilate, and maybe Jesus would have heard what they said, because there were more of them, we don't know. But it was Pilate who appears on both sides, one after the other. It makes, I think, for a fascinating development of the case against Jesus, where neither of those parties Pilate interviewed were involved in all the discussions. You know, sometimes we'll have a round table discussion where everybody involved is present so they can hear what each other has to say, but that wasn't the case at this time. So is it all dependent on Pilate? Who is it that decides the course that things will take? It's not hard, I think, to, when you remember that Pilate is a man, it's not hard to get a sense of his irritation with these parties involved. Perhaps he was intrigued at the start, but there were some odd things about the case. The questions that he asks suggest that. And it wasn't going according to plan. It wasn't according to plan for Pilate. He did get snappy. He got irritable. It wasn't going according to plan for the Jews who were delivering Jesus. They already seemed to have concluded he was just on the road to go to his death. And now Pilate asks them, what's the accusation you bring? So in this case we have the accusation. It mattered to Pilate what men were saying about Jesus. He had to pass a judgment on the matter. It also concerned Pilate that Jesus was being called the King of the Jews. And that did matter to Jesus as well. He did engage on this question. But it did not seem to matter to either Pilate or the Jewish leaders what was the truth of the matter. That's what matters to Jesus. And so we, I think, see three key questions in this passage. What is the accusation? It is the question that Pilate asks. What accusation do you bring against this man? But then there's the matter of the kingdom. How do you think about the kingdom? What is the kingdom? That was a matter that that Jesus particularly dealt with. And then, of course, that great last question in this section from Pilate, what is truth? These three questions, then, let's see briefly what we might learn and understand from them. What is the accusation? What accusation do you bring against this man? Verse 29. As I said a moment ago, there's a lot of evidence in the other gospel accounts that Jesus had been already met before the religious, the Jewish council, the Sanhedrin, after Peter denied him in the high priest's place. He was then taken to meet with the Sanhedrin, who questioned him. There are also, I think, strong signs through this whole record that Pilate knew of this issue earlier. It would have been up to him, eventually at least, to agree to some of his men going as part of the arresting party into the garden. Judas had received a detachment of troops and officers from the chief priests. So there were soldiers, from Pilate's garrison who had gone to arrest him. And that could not have happened unless he'd had some idea, been given some briefing as to what this was all about. They make their sideways accusation. They don't really answer his question in verse 30. They're saying, well, what do you think we're doing coming here? He's obviously an evildoer. He's a criminal. And that's all they have to say about him. And then Pilate goes back to challenge Jesus himself. He's not getting a great deal from them. He goes to Jesus in verse 30 and he asks, are you the King of the Jews? Depending on this, on the answer to this, he may have a case to deal with. But this, according to Luke, when Pilate asked this question, it was a response to further accusations. John is very brief in verse 30. That's all he has to say. But the other Gospels, and Luke especially, in chapter 23, will give more of their accusations, but it really is rather wild accusations, even as it's told us there. But for all that they have been saying, all that they might have said to be able to get this detachment, Pilate sees fit to go back to the beginning. What accusation do you bring against this man? And it is rather an arrogant, dismissive kind of response that they give. If he were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him up to you. Trust us. But it does suggest that they thought that it had all been squared up earlier, that it was just going through formalities here. But look at the nature of their response. Is it an accusation? If it was, it's very politic. It's very evasive. It's a catch-all implication. He's a criminal. But on what basis? What are the allegations? They don't really answer that. Except in political terms, according to Luke. To read Matthew's account, chapter 27, it was one of these cases where you might ask a perfectly reasonable question. A judge is perfectly within his rights to ask the question, what accusation do you bring against this man? And even if it had been prepared beforehand, why did they not simply restate it? Perfectly reasonable manner, but all the reply you get is the shout. Just the same as before. Just the same, same old, same old. No attempt to answer the critique. No attempt to answer the query. And so often that's because there is no answer. So often that's because you have to be evasive. And with this in mind, if you go back just a little, John gives an explanation for why you have these two scenes that Pilate switches between the inside and the outside. It's a very skillful portrayal that John gives here. There's an underlying irony about it all, and it's been present through so much of John. He has presented, and he still does, these Jews who were so particular about fulfilling the law. On balance, this probably is a reference to this happening within the period of the Passover feast of a week to 8 days. And it's not specifically necessarily the Passover meal that they're concerned about. We're told earlier, aren't we, that Jesus had eaten the Passover. What exactly is the matchup? But it would seem to be that it's within this whole period that they want to keep themselves pure. And most likely that there was something to do with the Gentile premises that would have defiled them for longer than just the one day. So they were very particular about fulfilling the law. And they were taking a man, falsely accusing him, dismissing every investigation into him. They just wanted him dead. They were very set on getting him killed. The warrant for it was feeble, non-existent, and yet they were very special about keeping themselves pure for the Passover. It was John who recorded many chapters back, in chapter 6, verse 29, people asked him around him, and some of these people may have been there as well. They asked him, what is the work of God? And he said, this is the work of God. Is it to keep yourself and eat the Passover? The work of God is that you believe in him whom he sent, meaning himself. This man, he's an evildoer. We've delivered him up to you. But evading the truth. They do not have an answer. Later on into chapter 19, it tells us that there they do remember to accuse him that he made himself the Son of God. It was only their view that was false, a false claim. At heart, there is a religious accusation. That is their primary concern. And Pilate perhaps hints at that in verse 31. You take him and judge him according to your law. Isn't that the basis on which you're bringing him? But they are looking for a way to persuade this judge. Here was this judge whose only interest, they seem to have, he's been around long enough that they have been able to pick up that he was only interested in his own advancement in this world. And you see that in in other records outside the Bible as well. He's mentioned there. That question, or that accusation that he made himself the Son of God, did eventually disturb Pilate. But in the meantime, they were playing on this, that he was claiming to be the King of the Jews. That was all that there was to raise an alarm. But look at this king. He deals with it himself. He says in verse 36, he's speaking about his kingdom, but he says, if my kingdom were just like the kingdoms that you're familiar with, I have my servants, and they would fight that I would not be delivered to the Jews. It was just an alarm. This king was apparently isolated. He was looking weak. But yet, there is something about him that leads Pilate to dig deeper. Is there some substance behind this? Or were these people just paranoid? Were they just serving their own ends? He does find that he's compelled to look a bit further. And his interest is piqued by this title, King of the Jews. It's a political reference. That was his world, a king claimant. And it was very astute of the Jews who delivered Jesus to play on this sharply tuned political radar of Pilate. You see more detail on that, Luke 23. You could read that a little, and then also later in John 19. But already here, and you find that it is an issue that Jesus is willing to respond about, more so to Pilate than any of the other questions, either to Pilate or to the high priest or the Sanhedrin and so forth. Jesus does respond on this. First of all, he asks for clarification. Where is this man coming from? We know that Jesus knows the heart of man. But what kind of answer? And it's not that Jesus would cut his cloth to fit the situation, but here is a man who needs to be answered in a certain way. It was Jesus who said, we need to be wise as serpents. You need to be wise in the way that you deal with other people. What answer would be more effective to Pilate? And that depends on where Pilate is coming from. Are you speaking for yourself? Have you heard this? Have you been dwelling on this? Have you been trying to work it out? Or is it just simply because others have said this to you? Where does it come from? But it's really rather surprising. Pilate is the governor. Jesus is one man who has been arrested in the garden, and he has been hauled up, unable to do anything. He's still bound. He's there before this governor who represents Caesar of the great Roman Empire. And Pilate has some questions for him. Are you the King of the Jews? Jesus responds with another question. He interrogates the judge. Where are you coming from? Bit of a surprise in a court setting. And so Pilate snaps back. Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you to me. But he can't help himself. He's got to go on. He's intrigued. He's trying to work this thing out. But his answer, really the whole thing is beneath him. There's certainly not enough here to sentence Jesus as he was being pressured to. He's called the King of the Jews, but there's no evidence that he is. Where's his following? Then I suppose the other strand to Pilate's answer is, well, even if you are the King of the Jews, I'm not under you. I'm not one of the Jews. I don't intend to serve under you. But it's out of all of this that then we have this vitally important definition of the kingdom of Jesus. It's not of this world, first defined in negative terms. It's not the way that this world is. It's not a kingdom in the way that this world thinks of kingdoms. look at the world, it's lined up against him. The Roman Empire, the Jewish authorities, they're teaming up against him. My kingdom is not of this world. If it was, wouldn't I come with a show of strength? My kingdom is not from here. I don't think we ever find that he really accepts that this title himself. It is those around him who are saying that he's king of the Jews. But he is saying, my kingdom is not from here. It's something different from what you think of as the kingdom of the Jews. It's not only more than the kingdom of the Jews, it's something very different from any kind of kingdom you are familiar with, Pilate. My kingdom is not from here. His kingdom is something very different from what most folk still today are familiar with. It's not from here. His authority in this kingdom has a different source. It's a new source. And that's what he goes on then to expand on in a further phase as he meets with Pilate in chapter 19. And then, as well as the negative definition of the kingdom, there is the positive into verse 37. He expounds his own purpose. This is what the kingdom is about. I am a king. Yes, I am a king. But not just the king of the Jews. Those kingdoms were aligned against him, but it's not like this. I've come to bear witness to the truth. That's the kingdom I'm seeking to build. The kingdom of the truth. He is the king of truth. He came to show God's glory, which is truth. We don't see it unless we're looking for it, unless we are attuned to the Spirit of God. It is a different, very different way. Political considerations don't come into it. That was Pilate's raison d'etre, his reason for living. Preserving power is not foremost, and that was the Jewish leader's purpose in life. Self-righteousness has no place. That was theirs as well, and you might say Pilate's too. That is the nature of man without God. Political considerations, preserving power, being self-righteous, that is so important for all men. But if you're looking for those kinds of things, if that's your purpose in life, you won't hear his voice. It had been amongst them for 3 years, particularly. They had heard it, they had questioned it. But they hadn't heard it. You can make a pretense of honoring truth. They sought to keep themselves from being defiled so they might eat the Passover as they had been commanded. It looked like they were keeping the truth, honoring truth, but they would not let it strike home. They would not let it be their rule. That applies for every man, for you and for me too. Do we hear the truth? Just look at what was going on around him. There he was ready to speak the things that needed to be spoken, and no one would hear him. Look at the way men still treat Jesus, selecting the bits they like, ignoring the rest. Look how men treat God. As long as God stays at arm's length, that's fine. As long as he stays away. But here he came amongst men in Jesus, full of grace and truth. Look how men treat truth. They treat it as a mere concept. What is truth? Not the reality. It does set you free. It does guide through life. And so that great question, what is truth? Doesn't this underlie all that's been going on here in this event around Jesus? What is truth? You might well turn to Pilate and say, well, look, he's right there in front of you. But Pilate was a postmodern man 2,000 years ago. Let's not get too tangled up in eras of thought, because what goes around comes around, and it's with us most of the time. This has always been in the heart of man. What is truth? And let's walk away. Don't you see the drama of it? There's that governor who hears this statement from Jesus, and he's got a great answer. He can just dismiss the thing. And then he said this, he went out again to the Jews. He wasn't going to wait around for further discussion. And this is the clincher as far as he's concerned. Who ever has the truth? And if no one has the truth, as he put it, what does truth matter? Even in judging a decision whether this man should live or not, when he finds no fault in him at all. Pilate was a practical man, as we might say. Let's be practical now. Let's be done with philosophies. What is truth? Well, let's get on with the job. But what is more practical? Practical things require the truth to judge them, whether they are truly practical. They may seem to be for a moment, but is that what is right? Is that what is true? Is that what will endure? The things that you practice, the things that you do. Why do you do what you do? Pilate or the Jews? What foundation did they have for doing these things? You, me, politicians, business people, entertainers, neighbors. Why do what we do? Why does anyone do what they do if they say, what is truth? I think this reminds us of how the kingdoms of this world have tinkered so much with the truth. I was speaking to a chap yesterday who works in the financial industry, and he was saying how it's so complex with so much that's been changed in regulations here and there over the years. And that's often what does happen, that government makes a decision on one part of life or another, and it's tinkering around without really dealing with bigger issues. And that's what's happened with the truth. That's what happened with Israel, with the truth, over the centuries. The Passover was true. The Passover was a glorious thing. But here it is, being used to keep Jesus at arm's length, to keep him away from them. Men have played with the truth over the years, changing a little bit here, a little bit there. We do it ourselves every day. How do we see that truth? Only the truth will set us free. Only the truth leads men into a wholeness of life and a harmony with each other. Righteousness. Here was Jesus on the way to his death. He was not turning from it. He was suffering. Even in this, under Pilate, it was not just the blows on his body, but here he was bearing witness to the truth. This has been his entire purpose, coming amongst us. This is what he was doing right here and now, as all he could see ahead of him was his own death for men. His own covenant people were despising the truth, were compromising it. And even then, he offered it again. Hear my voice. I tell you the truth. I bear witness to the truth. the truth that God is King, the truth of love, and all these things. And as Pilate asked the question and went out to avoid the answer, he went to the Jews and he said to them, "I find no fault in him at all." Do you see how this plays in here? Finds no fault in him, so what do I do next? What does the truth require that I do next? Will the truth prevail? When I say the truth, that there is no fault in him at all, will this crowd of people stop and listen and pause and think and step back from the brink? Will they give Jesus another hearing? He came to bear witness to the truth. Is he the one that you hear? The truth in this world is now very often hard to distinguish in the various things that we hear. So find a starting point. There was something that I had in the box yesterday, and there were four different wires, and they were all knotted up together. And not anymore, because I took the time to find an end and to follow it through. Find a beginning. Here is the beginning. I've come to bear witness to the truth. If truth seems to be hard to hear, find that starting point. We read at the beginning of the service, the stone which the builders rejected, this is him, has become the chief cornerstone, the foundation, the finishing stone by the Lord's doing. Clear away the dust. Find the starting point in the voice of Jesus. If you are of the truth, you will hear his voice. If you desire the truth, hear his voice. The voice of him who even then was on his way to a completely unjustified death. A false death, you might say. But it was all for the sake that men may find the truth. And life by that truth. As we read this passage, you have in a room in the praetorium this man Jesus, possibly others around him who may have helped John to come to this record in due course. Certainly Pilate was there, face to face with Jesus, who comes with a kingdom to bear witness to the truth, the kingdom of truth. In Acts chapter 17, Paul talks to the men of Athens. And amongst other things, he says, "He, God, is not far from each one of us." And he talks about men groping around, trying to lay hold, or maybe not trying. Deliberately avoiding evasive questions, evasive answers. But he is not far from each one of us. Acts 17. Pilate looks like that. Paul had another king and governor to deal with, and he said at one point, "I'm almost persuaded you are a Christian, or you are almost a Christian." God is not far from each one of us. Pilate asked some good questions, but did he listen to the answers? Pilate believed his interests lay elsewhere. He was under tension. He was this faultless man. Absurd claims to his mind, yes, but he was a faultless man. And there were willful men on the outside. They were making life difficult enough for him as it was. It could be even worse. There were some of the things that they leveled at him in the other gospel records. He understands the kingdoms of this world. Pilate was one who understood what it was to seize the moment and let other things take care of themselves. But that's not always the truth. The truth was right there in Pilate's grasp, but he avoided it. He was like that sailboat who tacked, turned, took a turn to get there through the wind of truth that was right in his face. And he went against it, against the spirit of truth. There was a ruler of men, it strikes me, should it have been otherwise, what a difference it would make, what a difference it does make if men, especially leaders, hear the truth and receive it. But as a leader, he was still just a man. And just like him, so many still ask, what is truth? We only have a small part here, but it's the beginning. Who will hear the answer if they ask that question? Or is the answer too demanding? By demanding nothing except trusting in this Jesus. I think Pilate felt helpless in the circumstances. He needed to do something. He was way out of his depth. But while Pilate was helpless, Jesus was stepping each step closer to completing the work of his kingdom. He is the truth. His death is true. And it's through his death that we are called to hear his voice all the more powerfully. And by hearing his voice, that we too might find life and freedom in the truth. And just so far, I'm seeking God's blessing on his word this morning. Let us pray together.